Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Hi, and welcome to the Latin American History Podcast. Episode 103. The many discoveries of Machu Picchu. There is a picture, you will know the one I mean immediately, taken from slightly above its main subject. It looks down on a complex of ruined stone buildings. What makes the photo so spectacular is not just the well-preserved ruins of a centuries-old empire. It's also the setting. Those ruins take up the whole of a narrow ridge, which drops vertically down for hundreds of meters on all three visible sides. An enormous peak rises dramatically right behind all this, standing guard over the ruins, while a ring of mountains enclose the scene in the background, really ramming home the impression that this is a place lost in remote, spectacular territory. This is probably the most famous picture of Latin America in existence. Off the top of my head, the only one which comes close to being as instantly recognisable is the one of the Sugarloaf and Botafogo Bay, taken from Christ the Redeemer in Rio de Janeiro. Both of these photos are retaken, probably hundreds of times a day, by hordes of visiting tourists. They adorn the websites and walls of travel agents, appear on posters, and on people's social media accounts. I think the one I'm talking about, the one of Machu Picchu, just about edges it in terms of recognition. It looks like something from a fantasy film, almost too picturesque to be part of real history. Such a spectacular place is crying out for a good story. One of a lost refuge of a vanquished empire, forgotten by humanity, until found by a real-life intrepid Indiana Jones centuries later. And it does indeed have such a story attached to it. The truth, though, is much more complex than that. In the last few episodes of the series we did on the conquest of the Inca, one of the threads of that story concerned the Neo-Inca state. Once it had become clear that the possibility of full-scale resistance had passed, the Inca leadership retreated into the remote mountains and made a capital for its new rump state in Vilcabamba. At this point, the Spanish were largely concerned with fighting each other for control of the newly established viceroyalty of Peru, although the Neo-Inca state did emerge from its hidden valleys to raid for several more decades. Machu Picchu was in the same region, meaning that it possibly continued to be inhabited by the independent Inca during this period. It is unclear, however, how important it was to them. It had been built as a private estate for the Emperor Pachacuti, not as a functioning city. Property of the Inca emperors was generally not inherited. Cusco, for example, had multiple palaces, as the one belonging to a dead emperor became a sort of monument to them, and the new ruler constructed their own. This then probably limited Machu Picchu's use once Pachacuti died. The Spanish never settled the region very thoroughly, even once the Neo-Inca state had been defeated. Although Cusco was relatively close, it was separated by the deep mountain valleys, and their focus was elsewhere. The capital of the Viceroyalty of Peru was down on the distant coast at Lima. It's easy to see then how Machu Picchu could have got lost. Even Vilcabamba, the capital of the Neo-Inca state, was forgotten about once the Spanish had managed to locate and sack it. Machu Picchu was never found, and so it sat abandoned for centuries, waiting for an intrepid adventurer to discover it. The protagonist of the second part of this story, that of rediscovery, is a man named Hiram Bingham. His life is almost as interesting as the site itself. His full name was Hiram Bingham III, and he came from a celebrated American family. On his mother's side, he was descended from one of the most prominent passengers on the Mayflower, and she had borne his surname, Brewster. The Binghams had also come over to the USA early, and the two preceding Hirams, his father and grandfather, had shown an interest in adventure and foreign lands. Hiram Bingham I had been a missionary in what had been the still independent Kingdom of Hawaii. In fact, he was one of the first missionaries there, and he was involved in persuading its queen to convert, as well as building and preaching in one of the oldest churches on the archipelago. His son Hiram II followed in his footsteps, preaching in Hawaii, and moving on to the Gilbert Islands, which are also in the Pacific, to convert the indigenous peoples there. Our Hiram was born in Hawaii, and lived there until it was time for him to go to university. He studied at all the top institutions, Yale, Berkeley, and Harvard, focusing on the newly established field of Latin American history. Then he became an academic, teaching at Harvard and Princeton, before ending up the professor of South American history back at Yale. This job took him to Chile for a conference, where he undertook his first travels through southern Peru and visited some Inca ruins. It seems that this was the event which persuaded him to leave the classrooms and libraries of the USA and engage in practical archaeological work. He knew that a new capital had been established by the Neo-Inca state, and that it was called Vilcabamba, but at the time its location was unknown to the Western academic world. The purpose of the 1911 Yale Peruvian expedition was to discover it. This he did, although he died without ever quite realizing the truth of the matter. He reached Vilcabamba after 5 days walking through difficult terrain. He wasn't the first to get there. He stayed with a plantation owner nearby and was assisted in finding these ruins by some of the Ashaninka people who lived in the area. He also didn't realize what he'd found. He knew it was a Neo-Inca ruin, but he didn't believe that this was the capital of their state. After a few days examining it, he moved on. It wasn't until the last part of the 20th century, when an explorer named Vince Lee started his work there, that it became clear that this was Vilcabamba. Not realizing that he'd already completed his mission, Bingham moved on. He was pointed towards a place called Vidcos by the population of a village near the ruin. You might remember this from the Conquest of Peru series, as the place where Manco Inca first retreated to before moving further back to Vilcabamba. Still determined to find the lost capital, Bingham carried on. He'd made contact with an American-born professor named Albert Giesek, who had become the rector of the University of Cusco. Giesek told him that a chance encounter had made him aware that there might be another set of ruins up in the remote mountains. He had stopped at an inn while travelling through the area, and the owner had mentioned that they existed. They had been unable to visit, as the wet season had made the climb impossible, but the innkeeper said that if he came back, they could go look at them. Bingham decided to investigate. He found the innkeeper, Melchor Arteaga, and Arteaga agreed to show them to him. He told him that the mules wouldn't make it up, so they set off on foot up the canyon walls. They crossed a river, using a bridge made of logs tied precariously to the rocks on either side, and then they began climbing. When they were most of the way up, they came to a simple hut, owned by an indigenous family who rented a small piece of land there. The family gave them some food, and then it was agreed that their 8-year-old son would take him the rest of the way, while Arteaga waited there. They passed stone terraces cut into the side of the hill and farmed by indigenous people, just as the Inca had done. Then they reached the ruins of stone houses, the first relics of the settlement. A few moments later, they were at the ruins themselves. Bingham wrote some notes about what he saw and drew a rough map. He took some photographs, including that famous shot which has been recreated millions of times by tourists. From his notes, we know that he was impressed with Machu Picchu, with the stonework of its buildings, and with the views. He doesn't seem to have immediately given it the weight of importance which he later would, however. They went back down to his camp in the valley below, and the next day they carried on their journey. He would revise his opinions, though. He became convinced that this was the lost Inca capital. The word discovery or discoverer is a complicated one. Until relatively recently, it was simply normal to say that Columbus discovered America. Obviously, everyone knew that humanity had reached the Americas millennia before, and that it was home to millions of people. What was meant when they said that he discovered it was that he added the hemisphere to the knowledge of everyone who lived in the rest of the world. People these days point out that perhaps the word isn't the most accurate one, given all of those people who lived there. Bingham did the same with Machu Picchu. He brought the site to the world's attention. Despite all of the evidence I'm about to talk about, there is then one sense of the word which you can use to describe Bingham's visit to the site, although rediscovery might be a better one. I want to put those considerations aside for now, though, and talk about practical ones.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you ignore the argument about whether the word discovery is the right one for when Columbus first reached the Caribbean, it still wasn't quite correct. It was later realized that Europeans, the Vikings, had reached northeast Canada before him. Knowledge of this had been lost, so Columbus did bring the existence of the Americas to the rest of the world's attention, just like Bingham did with Machu Picchu. But we now know that he wasn't the first non-American to learn that it was there. A similar set of considerations exist around Machu Picchu. There are, of course, the local people that knew of its existence. Bingham would never have got there if it wasn't for the knowledge of Arteaga and the local family living halfway up the path. Arteaga had told Giasek, so even he knew it might exist, even if he hadn't been there and confirmed it. Other locals clearly knew about it, because he passed through those farm terraces close to the ruins. Even if you want to say that Bingham was the first outsider to reach Machu Picchu, you find yourself running into problems. While the Spanish never reached the ruins, they didn't need to in order to conquer Vilcabamba and establish control over the region. It was of no value to them, so they made no effort to find it. One soldier, however, named Baltasar de Ocampos, does seem to have got there in the late 1500s. He wrote an account of post-conquest Peru and appears to have visited the ruins along with 12 companions. He refers to it as Pitcos, but from his description, it seems unlikely to have been a different Inca settlement. It seems that Bingham read Ocampos and knew of his description of the site. Now this strips away a little of the romanticism. An outsider had set foot there, but this was a long time ago, soon after the conquest. After that, it was lost for centuries. Well, it seems that that's not true either. Two maps have come to light, dated to 1870 and 1874, which mark Machu Picchu's location. The first one was made by an American named Henry Singer, and it was produced to promote mining investment in the area. It seems that the ruins were just an interesting side feature. The map is more concerned with the potential location of metals, but they are there. The second one was drawn for a similar purpose by a German named Hermann Göring, working for the Peruvian government. In 1880, a French explorer mentions the existence of Machu Picchu, although he had just been told about it and didn't visit. In the wake of Bingham making his discoveries known, several other people claimed to have already been there. One was an English missionary named Thomas Paine, who not only said he had got there first, he also said that he had told Bingham about it. It's hard to judge if this is true, as there is no written evidence to go on. Apparently a pair of Germans made a similar claim, the explorers Karl Heinel and J.M. von Hassel. There was another German who does seem to have got there, although he wasn't interested in making it known, and this only came to light much later. Augusto Burns bought some land in the valley across from the site, and is thought to have reached Machu Picchu in 1874. He was an engineer, again looking for mining prospects, and he even registered a company in an attempt to get permission to dig up the ruins. He planned to sell anything of value he found to the highest bidder. Thankfully, this didn't come to pass. Most damning, however, to the story of Bingham rediscovering Machu Picchu is the case of Agustin Lizarraga. Lizarraga was a Peruvian from the Cusco area who had come to the remote region with his brother Angel to avoid military service. They had set themselves up as farmers and done quite well for themselves. The evidence that he was at the ruins is indisputable. To begin with, there is the fact that Bingham himself writes in his diary, on that first visit to the ruins, that he found the words A. Lizarraga, 1902, carved into one of the buildings. He even visited Lizarraga's brother the next day and asked him for information. The brothers had worked on the hacienda of a wealthy family nearby, who seemed to have some interest in archaeology. The brothers saw the area around the ruins as potentially good farming land, but the family agreed to give them an alternative plot in return for leaving it alone and letting the government know of the ruins' existence. This information was passed on to professors at the University of Cusco, including possibly Giesecke. Bingham achieved a great deal of fame for discovering Machu Picchu. He was still relatively young, and the site would be his focus for the years immediately afterwards. He returned to the site in 1912, 1914, and 1915 to further excavate it. He wrote books on the subject, and it certainly helped his career. It's hard to tell how much he encouraged the dramatic story of rediscovery, as I haven't had a chance to read any of his writing. He did quietly acknowledge that the site was known to local people, so he didn't pretend that he had been the first there since the Inca. He did, however, have the Lizarraga graffiti removed, he said for reasons of preservation. It's easy to see how a story this neat and intriguing, funded by Yale University and National Geographic, could have taken on a life of its own once newspapers and other publications got hold of it. There's that saying about not letting the truth get in the way of a good story. This can happen whether the protagonist wants it to or not. Bingham would fit a lot more into his life. He joined the military and helped with the consolidation of the relatively new US Air Force. Then he became the governor of Connecticut and later a senator. I'm not quite sure how this happened, but he appears to have run for both positions, and being unable to take them both up, he resigned as governor after one day, making his stint the shortest ever in the history of the state. As a senator, he would later get into trouble for a lobbying scandal. He seems to have paid a lobbyist the wages set aside for an assistant, and then allowed the lobbyist to attend official finance meetings. It's thought that the main character in the film Secret of the Inca was based at least partially on him, and that this then inspired the creation of Indiana Jones. Two of his sons made names for themselves as diplomats. Jonathan represented the country to the United Nations before becoming a politician. Hiram IV worked in Japan, China, Poland, and Britain before ending up in France during the Second World War. He helped 2,500 Jews escape the Nazis. Bingham died believing a couple of things about Machu Picchu, which we now know to be incorrect. As I mentioned earlier, he thought that this was Vilcabamba, the capital of the Neo-Inca state, although, to be fair to him, he had actually found that as well. He also believed that Machu Picchu had an important religious purpose. It wasn't until much later that it became clear that it was a royal estate. There is one more issue around Bingham's discovery of Machu Picchu, which I want to briefly mention. Earlier I touched on the idea that if he did not discover the ruins, he did bring it to the attention of scientists, archaeologists, historians, the academic community, and the world as a whole. Thanks to his time there, we know more about the Inca and their history, even if some of his conclusions proved to be incorrect. This has to be a good thing. There is a shared body of academic knowledge around the world, which everyone can draw on, and Machu Picchu adds to this. Knowledge for knowledge's sake, being valued over things like commerce, is something worth funding and seeking. The tension, however, comes from the fact that at the time, most of this knowledge, and the pursuit of it, was taking place in Europe and North America, just as happened all over the world. The British Museum being a famous example. Bingham took tens of thousands of artifacts from Peru for study back in Yale. He was given permission by the government at the time, but simply put, now Peru wants them back. They argued that it was just a loan, and any further study of them could be done within the country. It seems that Yale has agreed, and they began the process of returning the artifacts in 2012. If you've enjoyed this episode, and you want to do something to help out, one thing which helps new people discover the podcast is if people leave reviews wherever they get their podcasts from. If you've really, really enjoyed it and you're feeling generous, it is possible to make a small donation to help cover the costs of producing it. There's information about how to do this in the episode description. A huge thank you to everyone who's already done one of these things. And thank you to everyone for listening.
You've been listening to the Latin American History Podcast, written and recorded by Max Sargent. For more information, visit the website www.maxsargent.com/thehistoryoflatinamerica. And that's spelt MaxSergeant. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to get in contact at historyoflatinamericapodcast@gmail.com. You can also find the Facebook page by searching for the Latin American History Podcast. The Twitter handle is @HistoryLatinAM. And if you've liked the show, you can help out by leaving a review on iTunes. Alternatively, if you visit the website, you'll see that each episode is accompanied by relevant photos. Most of these are my own, taken during my time in Latin America. All these photos and more are available to purchase as prints at my Etsy shop. You can find this at www.etsy.com/maxsargentphoto. That's spelt www.etsy.com/maxsergeant photo. Thanks for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC Health/whatsyourwhy.